I'm 60 years old. I was born in London. I've lived in Worthing for the last 30 years, and I've been an active member of the Legalised Cannabis Alliance for about the last 10 years. First thing I'd like to say when I'm talking to students is, I'd like to say that don't forget, you can make a difference. You know, if you've got something that you want changed, if you've got something that you want done, then I would always say, you know, you can do something about it. History is littered with individuals, let's just say one, Nelson Mandela, who have made a change, made a difference. And so, you know, even though politics can be discouraging, I would always urge you to continue to try to sort of make your point and get your views across. We'll start off with, cannabis was made illegal in 1928 at an opium convention. The Egyptian delegates insisted that hashish be included with opium, and it was made illegal, although the British delegation actually abstained from voting through lack of knowledge, lack of information. And back in the Victorian times, you could actually buy tincture of cannabis in chemist shops. Queen Victoria actually is known to have used cannabis to help her ease her period pains. Cannabis really only became illegal in recent times. It's in the 1920s, between 1919 and 1933. USA had alcohol prohibition, which most of you probably know something about. When alcohol prohibition was repealed in 1933, the feds seemed to be a little bit at a loss as to what to do with themselves, so they brought in something called the Marijuana Tax Act, which actually made cannabis illegal. This was, as I say, in 1930, there was a man called Harry J. Anslinger who was made the head of the Narcotics Bureau in America. And at the same time, there was a company called DuPont Industries who were pioneering new synthetic materials like nylon and stuff like that. And in order to get their synthetic materials on the market, they had to demonize the one thing that was mainly used, which was hemp. And Harry J. Anslinger basically told the average Mr. and Mrs. American that the sort of people that used cannabis were Hispanic and black, and if when they used cannabis, they would break into your house and, you know, kill your children and rape your wife. And these were the sort of this was the sort of propaganda or impropaganda, as I like to call it, that was being put out. He also said things like, who uses cannabis? Musicians, but not good musicians, jazz musicians. These were statements that you can actually find on the net, which was said by Harry J. Anslinger. And the last thing on this subject I'd like to say is that Harry J. Anslinger was actually Mr. DuPont's nephew. So if you think about it, DuPont Industries were trying to pioneer, get their new synthetic materials on the market, and Harry J. Anslinger was in a perfect position to demonise hemp, and it was all sort of very economical and political. The Legalised Cannabis Alliance was formed in 1999 as a registered political party. They fielded candidates in by-elections and in 1999 and 2000, and in general elections in 2001 and 2005. They also contested local elections. After the 2005 general election, we deregistered as a political party and became a pressure group. This decision was made for various reasons. First, one was financial. Standing in a general election costs about £1,000 for a candidate. £500 of this is for a deposit, which is returnable if you achieve 5% or more of the votes cast. The LCA lost its deposit every time. The other 500 goes on leaflets plus a few incidental costs. Second factor in this decision for deregistering was there were people from other political parties who wanted to join us, but belonging to two political parties was a conflict of interest, so they couldn't do that. If we were a pressure group, those people could become members. And third, one of the messages we got in the 2005 election from people was that they agreed with the legalisation of cannabis, but as a single issue party, they couldn't vote for us, as there were bigger issues to be addressed. So we decided that our limited funds could be better spent as a pressure group. So instead of trying to gain power, we would lobby those who had the power to change things. As for me, I started using cannabis in 1968 when I was 18. Until then, I'd been drinking quite heavily and regularly. When I drank, I lost control and did stupid things that I wouldn't do when I was sober. When I used cannabis, I didn't do stupid things and could still function normally. I couldn't understand why alcohol was legal but cannabis wasn't, so I decided to challenge the government over this. In 1969, I sent a letter to the Prime Minister. This letter had a wafer-thin piece of cannabis resin stuck to it, and in it I warned him to be careful because there was a policeman on his doorstep. I followed this up with a few more letters, but that was it for that campaign. In 1978, my cousin got busted, and he and I joined an organisation called the Legalised Cannabis Campaign. I didn't do any active campaigning, but I paid my money and I wore the badge. My serious campaigning started in 2001, when I joined the Legalised Cannabis Alliance. I stood for Parliament that year in my constituency of East Worthing and Shoreham. I polled 920 votes, 2.1%. This meant that I lost my £500 deposit as I failed to secure at least 5% of the votes. Despite this, I really enjoyed the campaign. I got on really well with the other candidates, even though they didn't agree with my policy. In 2002, I was invited to go to Holland and do a one-week course running a coffee shop. I came back to England and decided to open a coffee shop in my hometown of Worthing. I did this to challenge what I considered to be an unjust law. We had strict rules in the coffee shop. No under 18s, no hard drugs, no alcohol, no dealing, no soap bar. That's cannabis that's been adulterated. We sold good quality cannabis at fair prices openly. The amount that a customer could buy was limited to £30 worth. We ran for over 5 months before the police finally busted us. The next day we were open again for business. The coffee shop became so popular that we couldn't cope, so I opened another one. The first one was on the west side of town, the second one was on the east side of town. The police then busted the two together. Soon after this, the letting agent for the first one started threatening court action over my disregard for the law. This would have resulted in a long and costly court case, so I closed it down as I had enough to cope with already. The police then put a van and three cops outside the remaining coffee shop and served everyone who left the premises. Meanwhile, I'd been to court a few times and the magistrates had banned me from entering the coffee shop, so I had to rely on others to keep it going. Various mounting problems then forced me to close it down, and that was the end of that. Between the two of them, the project ran for over a year, and I felt that we had proved that coffee shop culture does not harm society. In 2003, I attended several court cases, magistrates and Crown, and in January 2004, I went to prison for a short stay. This is something I wouldn't want to repeat. So if you are trying to achieve political aims, I would advise you to keep it legal, unless you fancy a spell in the cooler, but it ain't nice, so I don't recommend it. In 2005, I stood for Parliament again in East Worthing and Shoreham. I also stood in the next door constituency of West Worthing. In East Worthing, I polled 677 votes, 1.5%, and in West Worthing, I polled 550 votes, 1.2%. I didn't enjoy the campaign as much this time and was glad when it was over. During the years I've been active with the LCA, I've also acted as an agent for an LCA local candidate and attended various meetings, rallies, marches and conferences around the country. I also wrote lots of letters. This is my latest offering. You can always write letters to MPs. don't always get particularly good results, but I'll give you a quick example now. This is a letter I wrote to David Cameron on the 15th of November 2010. Dear Mr. Cameron, recently the government has announced the policy of avoiding custodial sentences for violent criminals. I believe the only people who will agree with this policy will be the violent criminals. If violent criminals are going to escape prison, how can the government justify the fact that custodial sentences are still being handed out to sick and disabled people who are growing a small amount of cannabis for their personal medical use? Mr. Winston Matthews of Surrey and Mr. Edwin Stratton of East London have recently both been given custodial sentences for growing cannabis for their own personal medical use. Mr. Matthews received 6 months suspended for 2 years and Mr. Stratton three months suspended for 1 year. The next two paragraphs are a quote in the judge in Mr. Stratton's case. Passing sentence today, Judge Tudor Owen said that a custodial sentence was unavoidable, but added that he was satisfied that Mr. Stratton had been cultivating the drugs for what he believed were medical reasons. He explained, "I take into account your impeccable character and that you are not intended to supply this to anyone else, and that you are taking it for what you perceive to be good medical reasons." So